Tarr brings it into the zone. He loses it too. Now ahead it goes for Ponick. Ponick's got a breakaway. He's in a goal! Gars! Holy Mackinac! The Leafs lead it 2-1.
And that ended up being the game-winning goal. Another side of Richard Ponick we had not seen. The flashy goal scorers, the Toronto Maple Leafs, go on. Defeat the Detroit Red Wings by a score of 4-1. Welcome to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelnick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Of course, we'll talk about tonight's game. We'll take some of your calls a little bit later on as well about the Toronto Maple Leaf juggernaut continuing an impressive win tonight at Air Canada Centre. We'll hear from Randy Carlisle, check in with our man Chris Johnson, and much, much more. And Mark, boy, it is a pretty impressive two wins against a very strong Detroit Red Wing team Wednesday at Joe Louis Arena and tonight here at ACC.
Gord, that could be the most complete game of the season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, you look at the second period, that is their best period, 20 shots on net against the Red Wings. Again, this is a team that you played on Wednesday night that you got widely outplayed, widely outshot. And yes, Detroit played last night. But again, one of the teams or one of the NHL's top teams comes into your building. There's been a lot of talk about the goaltender has been your top star for the last three games. Analytic department is saying what's going wrong with the Maple Leafs, and yet you put forward a great performance tonight. You'd agree this is a real good test that the Maple Leafs lived up to and continue their winning ways here at home.
And different than Wednesday, where, let's face it, it was grand theft larceny, as he said, by James Reimer. Another game, excellent goaltending, this one by Jonathan Bernier. But we saw the best of the Detroit Red Wings tonight, and the Maple Leafs were up to par as well. I mean, the Red Wings played well, but nobody dominated, and ultimately the Maple Leafs took control of the game.
Well, they did in that second period, as mentioned already, and you talked about the guy who scored the goal, a great breakaway and a great move with a lot of confidence. And
who does that play? The Richard Ponick play. And again, if you didn't see the game tonight, it's, I mean, you explain it as far as a guy on a breakaway and making what is a high risk play unless you really know where you're putting it?
Well, it's a high risk play if you try to be as cute as Ponick was on that goal. I think we've seen Kadri or the better skilled players do a little trick over top of the puck where they almost wave over it. Which he did going to his backhand, and you're so patient, and he didn't put a lot of speed on that shot.
No.
You almost have to place it through the five hole, which is an art in itself. Only goal scorers that have a lot of confidence, not fourth line players on a breakaway
exactly.
Do that, right? I mean, you go back to the bench and your coach would be looking at you saying, what are you thinking? No, you're not playing on the top line. When you get a chance on a breakaway, just shoot the puck, and yet this shows a lot for, this is a skilled guy playing on the fourth line, Richard Ponick is. I mean, I know a couple of years ago when he played in Syracuse, he had 22 goals in 51 games. He was a 30-plus scorer in I think he's Slovak, by the way.
Yeah. You're saying that because you know I'm half Czech?
Well, yes, exactly. Czech. I just wanted to double check. I didn't cross my republics by any stretch of the imagination.
He is Czech, by the way. He's Czech. He's one of me, sort
he
of.
Is.
Yeah.
Okay. Forgive me.
I mean, there's not a harsh bitterness that way.
He's not Czech. He's Slovak. I'm telling you, 100% he's Slovak. Because I had the same discussion with Chuck Luke.
I like to claim all
Czech
the guy.
Well. Anyways, what I'm saying is that Steven Stamkos even claimed that he was one of the most skilled players that he played with and yet fell out of favor in Tampa
Stamkos
Bay.
Stamkos is Czech, by the way.
He is?
No, he's not.
Oh, no. Okay. I think he's Macedonian or whatever. Holy smokes, what are we doing? Like United Nations tonight here on the post-game show? But the fact is that he gave Brendan Smith the business, Richard Ponick, near the end of the game, finished his check hard.
Yeah.
And Smith took exception, and so Ponick drops the gloves. And a good tilt.
Wow.
You said, wow, if he ever connected on one of those ones. And yet a spirited effort by the Maple Leafs on a lot of different fronts. Bernier, an incredible save in the first period on Darren Helm. Mrazek was up to the task equally as well.
He's so aggressive.
Yeah,
I love Mrazek.
Well,
he is so aggressive.
Well, there was one save on Morgan Riley, I think it was in the first period, or Jake Gardner, one of those two guys I'm getting mixed up. But he came so far out of the net to come out and challenge. And again, he was bowled over once in front of the crease on a Cody Franson shot on the power play that somehow he was able to get his stick on. It was a spirited affair. It was a great game to watch. And this is a great setup for tomorrow night where the question will remain, does Bernier now get the start tomorrow night against his old team? Because James Reimer, I believe, tweaked his groin a little bit Is he well enough to go tomorrow night? But so we don't have to answer that question yet.
And that'll be part of, we'll throw that out to the callers a little bit later on. We are going to take a break in a couple minutes. Scott Morrison will join us at the top of the hour and chat about that, our man from Sportsnet. But now, first of all, I didn't mean to, okay, Steven Stamkos, as you alluded to, he had high praise for Richard Ponick. Mm-hmm. And that goal, you described it well. It's like the JVR except in full flight. It's what JVR does when he stands around the net, that kind of stick wizardry. Richard Ponick did it full speed. And then that fight with Smith at the end, he just leveled him with a hit. And I'm surprised, you know, Smith only got two, but he absolutely broke his stick on him for starters,
yep.
Stuck him.
Well, and, you know, and he came back and cross-checked him and broke the stick on his forearm with a cross-check.
Two whacks. And then Ponick took a wild swing that if he would have connected, Smith had his helmet off. Anyway, it added that kind of spirit at the end of the game, as you mentioned. A little bit of everything tonight.
Yes, you know, the Leafs had a game in hand on the Red Wings. I believe they were, 6 points back going into tonight's game in their, I think they're in the Atlantic Division, right? The Maple Leafs are. And yet they pick up 2 points, so they pull within four and now have a game in hand. And the LA Kings, who are sitting here watching and resting, get to do what the Maple Leafs did to the Red Wings tonight. They'll get a rested team.
Well, and again, shots on goal tonight. I mean, this just really speaks volumes about the game. 41-28 for the Maple Leafs. I mean, normally it's the other way around. The Leafs facing over 30 shots, 35 shots generally. They had the edge tonight and win 4-1.
Well, you know what? One of the edges they did not have, and you think about how much the importance is of winning faceoffs and puck possession, and again, analytical part, the Leafs were killed in the faceoff circles 42-17.
And I believe,
but does it matter?
You said that in the first period when they lost their first 11 consecutive faceoffs. You said who had the edge in play, better scoring chances. That's what I like hanging with Ozolanics, whatever you may call it. We're going to get it. Plenty more Mark Osborne. Scott Morrison joins us in about 5 minutes' time. We'll take your calls. Great night at Air Canada Center. 4-1 win for the Maple Leafs over the Detroit Red Wings. You're listening to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
The Leafs have it right back again, and Riley carrying in over the line on a Lone Ranger rush. Took the shot, he scores! Morgan Riley, surrounded by four Red Wings, finds the top corner. It's 3-1.
Morgan Riley making it 3-1 for the Maple Leafs and the way to their 4-1 win over the Detroit Red Wings. Of course, that's the voice of play-by-play voice of Joe Bowen. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne, welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ozzy, was that a gettable goal? Was that the one goal that you think the Mrazek, the Detroit goaltender, could have had?
On the Morgan Riley goal,
yeah.
Is that what you're referring to? That great shot off the wing, which I think really did surprise him, because players don't often shoot the puck on the rush, right? They're always looking to find somebody in the slot or get a better angle, but yeah, maybe it could have been one that he had, but how can you argue with a shot like that? I think it really fooled him. It was fantastic.
Well, I think it's something you try it all when you're telling kids to shoot the puck. That's exactly why. Kessel's great at doing that, shooting it when you least expect it. And what looks like a relatively innocent shot all of a sudden catches him off guard.
And here's the difference, again, between Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner. Jake Gardner could do the same thing. He could have rushed that puck through the neutral zone just like that and got to that spot. He would have never shot it like Morgan Riley has a habit of doing. This is nice to see.
Well, it's great because our next guest is not just, of course, a legendary Hall of Famer, writer, broadcaster, but also actively involved in minor hockey as well. Scott Morrison from Sportsnet joining us. Now, do you teach Mark's team in that to take that kind of shot when you're Morgan Riley?
Well, I'm working on Mark stopping that one.
That's true.
He's a goaltender, so yeah. I don't care about the shooters. I worry about the goaltenders. But, you know, it was a great play by Riley because he just, that extra little bit of speed where he took it outside around the defenseman and then came in, and to Ozzy's point, I do think he surprised him. When you look at it from the angle behind Riley, it looks like it should have been stoppable because it was between the arm and the mid and the body, but it was a quick shot, and quite often, as Ozzy says, you see that puck go into the middle of the ice and not towards the net, so a good play all around.
Scotty, what was your impression of the game? Obviously, I think everybody's pleased with the way that the Leafs won. What impressed you the most about how, in fact, they won? Because there was a lot of facets of this game that I thought they really did have the upper hand on the Red Wings.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they got their power. They gave up a power play to get a power play, so your special teams have come through for you to a certain degree. The goaltending was solid when he had to get acrobatic. Bernier did that. I think what impressed me, Ozzie, I like that cadre line with Winnick and Santarelli on the wings. That line just played a smart game and created some chances, and they're getting solid performances right through the roster. I like the play late in the game with Panic and the fight with Smith. I just being aggressive like he was, and they just seem to be playing the puck a lot smarter and not doing the dangerous plays, but making the smart plays, and they were rewarded with some chances because of the smart plays. So it was a really safe, smart game, but not cautionary, if you know what I mean. And that it wasn't like they were sitting back, afraid to be making mistakes and giving up the shots. They just played a smart game and a clever game with the puck.
I know what you mean, but I'm not sure Gord knows what you mean when it comes to the smartness of a game.
Yeah, just email me later, okay, Scott, what exactly you're talking about. Actually, to break it down to simplicity, and by Nazem Kadri had the most ice time of any forward at 19 minutes, 26 seconds. But, you know, all those years and part of it was when Ozzie was playing, when you and I would, when I was working with the Leafs and you're on the media side, then the media side together, you know, every now and then, particularly the Gardens when the press box is smaller, just you talk and you go, that was a hell of a game. I mean, that's a great game. And when you're in the business, you get a little bit jaded. And sometimes it's nice to sit back and be a fan and really watch it that way. This would have been one of them.
Yeah, it was a rock-solid effort. And what is impressive from a Leaf perspective is that you think back a couple of nights to that the game in Detroit, in which they're wildly outshot, and it was a Reimer victory, and they were opportunistic, and they got some bounces and great saves and plays, and then they win it in the shootout, and then they were challenged, and a lot of people saying, well, here we go again. Here's this team that is defying the odds. Can they sustain this, or is this going to bite them again? And then they come back with a rock-solid effort tonight, now albeit against the Detroit team that had played last night in three games and four nights, and we know all about that. And Toronto will be challenged tomorrow against an L.A. team that has had the opportunity to sit back tonight and watch them after playing back-to-back. So, you know, they responded, they answered the call, and I think you give them credit for that.
Scotty, here's a little bit of a tough predicament I see the Leafs going into because of the stellar play, steady play of a Corbinian Holzer. Five hits tonight. He had six in Detroit. He gets his first point on the turnover on the Ponick goal, which he was the guy that moved the puck up to Richard Ponick on that goal that was the eventual game winner. So what do you do if you're the Maple Leafs moving forward when you get some healthy bodies back? And what do you do with a guy like Corbinian Holzer?
That's a great question, Ozzie. And, you know, initially when he came up, I was kind of scratching my head. And I remember being in the studio one night and somebody saying, can this guy play? Can he be a guy? And it's just kind of going, I'm not sure. And then he's really found his way. And as you pointed out, made some really nice plays and has fit in very well and been confident and composed. And I would be very reluctant to put him on waivers to send him down if that's the way you have to go at this stage. I think I would look, if you have to make a roster move and if you have to clear out a body, I think I would err on the side of I would send somebody down who doesn't need waivers to buy you a little bit of time at this point, and maybe you go with 3.5 lines up front and an extra defenseman till you see how things are health-wise. But he's been very, very solid for them, no question, these last few games.
Yeah, and early in the year it was Stuart Percy, and he's the guy that can go up and down rather seamlessly.
Yeah.
And now, as we mentioned, they're in a predicament that Holzer would require waivers. And I'm with you totally, and Ozzie said it earlier. Okay, you got Dallas Eakins dying every second night on TV with his Edmonton Oilers team. Who did he coach in the Marlies? I mean, he would take Corbinian Holzer's uncle, I think, if he played defense at all. But just, he's a guy who got the cap hit is incidental, $750K, and you always need extra defensemen. I know they didn't get a lot hurt last year in that, so I think there really is no choice. I think he's the one guy you would risk losing not a Carter Ashton or anybody else. This would be the guy you would lose on waivers.
And guaranteed. And you look at where are you the weakest in terms of, you know, or your biggest concern has been.
Same for defense. The whole league. The whole league weak on defense.
And so I think you protect yourself in that regard against injury and just giving yourself some options depending on how your team is playing and how certain individuals are playing. So, yeah, that one I'd be very careful with.
Scotty, heading into back-to-back affairs now.
Was that what you're looking on your BlackBerry for?
I'm going for Steve Fellin's stats.
I know, but you've mentioned the stat three times a period. Why did you have to double?
I go with Bernier anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Gord. I didn't even have a chance to ask.
Well, I know you've only mentioned three times a period. Go ahead, so the audience can hear it.
They had it on Hockey Night tonight, and I think it's like 48-33% in terms of success ratio. If you stick with the same guy, it's 33%. Wins, and it's 48 if you change him up. I don't care. I'm coming back with Bernier because he wasn't overworked tonight, and I think it's another statement that he's your guy, and it's a confidence boost for him, and I think it's a statement for your team, and everybody knows where they belong, and that's not to take away from what James Reimer did the other night. And if he did indeed tweak his groin, then it gives him another day to heal that and give you an option down the road.
Thanks,
Scott. That would be my take. What do you think?
Yeah. No, I'm right with you, Scott, and thanks for allowing me to ask you the question or even point out that
statistics get the stats. Bring the stats out for the audience.
Having negotiated Gord's initial contract, Ozzie, he gets paid by the word, so you should know that.
Well, I do know that.
Doug McClain tutored me. Okay,
yelling, though, so you weren't taught that well.
Well, yeah, that's right. This yelling, Kipper learned that one. Just start talking louder when the panel's on. But I think you have to go with Bernier as well. And I also think, you know, last year, it's funny, that game in L.A., Bernier started, then Reimer came in.
That's
when
Bernier
got hurt. And Kopitar had those incredible scoring chances that he couldn't put away. I don't know, like there's no acrimony between Bernier and the L.A. Kings. And years ago, Curtis Joseph, you remember, he really misfired when he ducked the Leafs as a Red Wing goaltender. He made a point of not playing. So I think in a lot of ways, and it's kind of a feel-good thing, but Bernier would be motivated to play the game on top of that.
Well, the way I look at it is your team's on a roll. You're at home. You're facing a ton of road games ahead. I forget what the number is because of the World Juniors and whatnot, and they're lopsided in terms of number of home games you played now is... You know, and Randy likes to use this line, give yourself the best chance to win. Well, to me, Bernier gives yourself the best chance to win. And regardless if it's against his former team, et cetera, that I think you have to make hay, and so you put him in that and see what happens. And the way he's playing is, he's not burnt out from tonight. And it was an interesting line, Gord and Ozzie, that Darren Pang used the other night, on our Wednesday night hockey, is he said that goaltenders define themselves about being able to carry the ball and to play back-to-back and be the guy and put the team on their shoulders. And I think he's at a point now, and he wasn't necessarily there last year because he hadn't played a ton and certainly not a ton as a number one goaltender, but I think he's at a point now where he's earned the right to put the team on his shoulders, and that's, I would give him the opportunity to be back-to-back.
Scotty, Gord and I were talking about this one particular player, and I don't want to be a negative guy when it comes down to up and down the roster and, you know, who is really being a bit of an Achilles heel on this Maple Leaf roster, but with the way that Ponick has played, or Santarelli, Daniel Winnick, David Booth is becoming, you know, more and more of a factor on the fourth line, or at least moving his legs. One guy that's been mysteriously absent, for me at least, has been David Clarkson. And if you look at his body of work the last number of weeks, yeah, he's got 8 goals on the season. But, you know, for a night like tonight, for instance, not very noticeable, not getting in on the forecheck, not getting in front of the net, no hits on the night. That's just what I want to, as an observation, ask you. Is it that obvious to me, or is anybody else noticing David being just a little bit on the perimeter, for instance?
I think the key, Oz, and you would know this better than anyone, and any of us certainly, is I think for a player like that, and he's one of those guys you can move up and down your roster, up and down your lines. And there's nights that he can play on an offensive line and do some good things by crowding the net, working the corner a little bit, being an abrasive. And then there's other nights when he's probably best suited to be your third-line guy. And I just wonder if there are times, and maybe that's to what you're suggesting at this point, that he's lost his place on that depth chart and that other guys who are in the right place on the depth chart are doing the things they should be doing and are expected to be doing, and that he looks a little bit lost because he's not contributing from probably at this stage an offensive perspective given who he's been playing with and what those expectations may be.
But, you know, again, when we talk about him and chatting with Brandon Pridham, the assistant to the GM today, he's the kind of capologist for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. You hate to say it, but that $525 million is a huge millstone around their neck. He makes more money than Booth, Santorelli, and Winnick make combined.
And you and me.
And, and not Oz, though.
Well,
maybe not. But that's a problem, because at the end of the year, when David Nonis is looking to sign people, that's the right to me right now, the only contract. And again, on a night like tonight, because Ozzie said you don't want to get negative, but it's about money. It's about managing the cap. And David Clarkson isn't a good cap contract at all, particularly when you get other guys now that you really want to sign.
No, not for where he's sliding in, that's for sure. And I think everybody knew when he was signed that it was a number that was bigger than it probably should have been. But I think for a lot of people, it also felt like the right thing to do. And, you know, nobody could have predicted last year. And I don't think you judge him in fairness on that. It's you go forward and you see how this season unfolds. And there's been improvement. There's no question. But, you know, the problem is that albatross doesn't go away. And that gorilla on the shoulders doesn't go away. But, you know, I think back to when, you know, a Brian Campbell who signed that huge contract in Chicago and whatnot, and all of a sudden it just became that he was wildly overpaid until he got to a team that the cap didn't matter and his salary didn't matter, and he did some good things for Florida and looked like a better player, and they raved about the things he did because they weren't measuring them against the dollars, and that's the... Sadly for David Clarkson, and I guess for the Maple Leafs, the dollars are always going to factor in, but you have to gauge him on what he contributes as a player, but the number is always, he's never going to live up to that number, let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely, and I was among those that agreed with the signing, so I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say I didn't, but it's more just a reality now. It's just a reality, that number that goes on. Well, I'll tell
you
what.
He's never going to be that player for that number, but, you know, it is what it is. You just hope he can do a lot of other good things that you measure him as just being a solid player and don't measure him as being what the dollar is.
Well, we're going to get back at it tomorrow against the Los Angeles Kings. Did want to say as well, going back a couple of days, and, you know, we go back a long way, and I just thought, I really thought it was riveting television. It was deserved for, there's no more words you can really say about John Beliveau. I just thought it really was very touching and appropriate, everything that happened, all the tributes. But it was great having you and Ron McLean involved, Scott Oak with the interviews in Montreal. So a great job. And, boy, you guys had endless stories about John Beliveau. And I know we really appreciate it. And I know that the family and everyone around would really appreciate it as well. So that was a great job on that.
Well, thank you for saying that. It was obviously, it's, you know, that's a John Beliveau, as you well know, is just a man like no other is, and to have the pleasure, as we all have, to have met him and been around him and have been in situations where you've seen stories and seen what he's all about and been a part of it is just amazing, and to be able to pay tribute to him is an absolute privilege.
Scott, thanks very much.
Okay, guys, take care.
Scott Morrison joining us, of course, part of our group here at Sportsnet. Covering the National Hockey League, our regular contributor, always and part of the group at Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, Chris Johnson joining us. Just started off, Chris, just saying with Scott that, you know, every now and then when we're in the business, whether you're on the management side or the media side, not that you get jaded, but it's a job. And every now and then it's nice to have a really enjoyable hockey game as a fan. And I found that tonight. Did you find that?
Certainly did. And, you know, it's funny. I view sometimes my role when I come on these programs with you and Ozzy to temper enthusiasm or expectations one way or the other, that, you know, the sky isn't falling or, you know, this is the greatest team ever, you know, depending on the result that night. But I must say that if the Leafs could play more games like that, I think that the enthusiasm would go up a notch for the team, because, you know, I thought that was a dominant effort. I know the Wings had played last night, but, you know, I really was impressed with the game that the Leafs played here tonight, especially given that we know that they were quite fortunate to win there in Detroit their last time out. This one was full value, that's for sure.
Chris, sometimes I gauge a team on their effort or their energy or how they play the night after they practice. And I know that, and I'm not sure, were you at practice yesterday or not?
I was, yes.
Okay, you were at practice. I know Gord wasn't, so I'll ask
I was
you.
I was doing research. I was on Hockey Central at noon.
Okay, I'll ask you this question. Jeez. Because what really jumped out at to me, and we've often mentioned the fact is, man, is it quiet in here, or what's going on with the Maple Leafs? You compare them to different teams. Yesterday in practice, Randy Carlyle seemed to be engaged. He was laughing, and I was going to measure that with the way that the Leafs played tonight, and I see this group right now moving to that level of being very comfortable, very confident, and even Randy trusting, I think, his assistant coaches and the demeanor of this hockey club in the last number of weeks and the way that they all approached the game.
Well, I mean, it's a good point, especially because, you know, as I say, the last few games prior to this one, you know, even though they had won, you know, there wasn't this great feeling of joy. I think that there was, you know, still, you know, a lot of defensive questions and you know, those will continue to persist. But at least here tonight, I think that he saw a response in the areas that he was looking for. And you're right. This team is, I mean, I know everyone in the city, and I think a lot of journalists, even myself, are kind of waiting for the impending doom, so to speak, just because of what's happened in past years here. But, you know, I don't sense that quite as much in the dressing room, which, you know, may be a good or bad thing, depending on where you sit. But, you know, it feels like a group that has come together and, you know, really doing the same, you know, pulling in the same way. And I think maybe what's most key is that they, you know, after those tough games, acknowledge that they were tough games, even though they won, and did find a way, I think, to come out and have a better effort out of it.
We talk about this guy all the time. I mean, this is the best stretch Nazem Kadri's played. I mean, it's just about, it's like probably 3 weeks ago, if you sat down and you said, what would you like to see him do over the next 3 weeks? He's one guy that's pretty well done all that.
Well, he's making a case to be one of their best players, that's for sure. I mean, I think he's already there, in fact. And you know, for me, the biggest measure for Nazem isn't the points. I mean, that's part of, obviously, his game and you know, what ultimately I think he'll be counted on more, you know, even more so in the future, you know, for this team. He'll get more offensive minutes. But, you know, they just control the puck so much, him, Santarelli, and Winnick out there. And you're right, they've been dominant. Randy has gotten to a point where he can trust them being on the ice against, you know, really good competition. And, you know, if you remember so much of what we talked about, you know, particularly 2-3 seasons ago, as a rookie, is that, you know, he couldn't be relied on defensively. Well, now that isn't the case, and you know, this guy's growing before our eyes, and you know, it makes sense with where he's at in his career and his age and his experience level. I mean, if you weren't seeing that growth, it would be a problem. But in his case, we certainly have.
Well, you two guys, I'm not going to get into 11 yet with Nazem Kadri. I give him a lot of credit.
No, incisive journalistic comments. That's all we're making.
I'm not getting into 11
yet. You don't have to. You're not invited.
A lot of what's going on, fellas, is, yes, Naz has played better, but the two wingers that he's playing with make a big difference. And having
that's just
played
what Chris
with guys.
Said.
Yeah, because of their ability to control the puck. Because of their smart play without the puck, which makes your centerman that much better. And if you put Nazem Kadri with a couple of other guys, look at the way that the Bolzac line against Datsyuk, Chris, played during periods of that first period. They never even had the puck, and they couldn't even play with you know, without the puck because of, you know, the dominance of that other line. So you put the Santarelli, Winnick, and Kadri line, maybe that they're going to actually work to get the puck, and when they do have the puck, they don't give it up. So that's just another observation by me for you two guys before you get a little bit too carried ahead in December.
Well, it just sounds to me like you're falling into the trap that everyone else does. I don't know why people are so hard on this guy, to be honest.
I'm not being hard on him. I'm just saying, let's...
But honestly, I think he's making a case to get more of a role than he has. You know, I know that the wingers probably are helping, but I'm still want to see him in a long stretch in a more offensive role to see what he can do, because I think he could be a dynamo if he's given a little more trust.
But the other point Ozzie's making, I believe a point he's trying to make, but to me, Kadri, I'm with you, Chris, about that. But the other part a few weeks ago when you said, where's that balanced scoring from 2 years ago and wanted to get that back? It's come back, but I'm surprised, not just Kadri, but as we say, Santarelli, Winnick, I mean, you name it, tonight, Ponick. I shouldn't say stunned, But the number of guys that now have stepped up, and including Clarkson, the last few weeks, it's not just been two lines. It's been four lines that have been scoring at different times.
Well, and it gives them a kind of enviable problem in that, you know, I think that there's a few players on the roster that could probably make case for to get more ice time, and you're getting that kind of internal competition in a healthy way, especially among the forward group, I think. And you're right. I mean, the Leafs right now, I believe, are still the second highest scoring team in the league, if not the highest at this point. They've played a lot of games where they're scoring, you know, four goals or more in a game. And you know, obviously with the goaltending, they tend to get, you know, even though the defense isn't always quite there, if you're playing at that level, you're going to win a lot of games. So you are seeing a lot more there. I mean, Richard Ponick has six goals now. I mean, he's not playing a lot of ice time. That's making the most of his opportunity at this point. And again, I just am with you. I think that's a good problem for him to have.
So, Chris, based on what you saw, the feel inside the dressing room, perhaps you've been in Randy Carlyle's press conference, who ends up playing in goal for the Maple Leafs tomorrow night with James having tweaked his groin a little bit?
That's James Reimer start still tomorrow, I think. And, you know, I like this. It's weird. People haven't caught on to this yet, strangely, because it's always a debate point. But the Leafs, they never have the same guy play in back-to-back situations. And this one in particular where, you know, as we stand here right now, I think it's about 17 hours to puck drop. I just think, you know, the percentages are against going with Jonathan Bernier, even though, you know, he's played well in the last stretch. He played well tonight. You know, I think that's going to be Reimer's start, and I really think it should be.
Well, we'll look forward to that again after the game tomorrow night. Thanks, as always. Just, again, if people want to join the Nazem Kadri fan club, is it 1-800-NAZ? I'm trying to get the number out there.
I think it's 1-800-AUSSIE. We want AUSSIE taking those calls.
Okay, that
was
it.
I think you guys are misunderstanding what I'm saying. You know, we're not getting too carried away in December.
Well, you're not. Obviously, you're not. Oh, we're God. Fine. We got the Christmas spirit. Thanks. Yeah, we'll have a hot toddy sometime, Chris, when Ozzy drives home, okay?
Sounds like a plan.
Chris Johnson joining us from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, for some hard-hitting journalistic content.
Okay, Gordon, you know, the question I'm throwing out to you right yes. now is, James Reimer, if he's not 100% for tomorrow night, yes, mm-hmm. he was on the bench, if he had to get thrown in tonight because of Bernier getting hurt or Bernier getting pulled or whatever it is, he'd be okay to go. If he's 95%, are you going with a 95% or a 90% James Reimer against the LA Kings, or are you going against Jonathan Bernier that has had a lot of days off, a lot of morning skates off, going up against his old team tomorrow night, the big LA Kings? What are you doing?
I'm going with Jonathan Bernier, and I believe the tweak has given Carlisle the out. Not that Randy really needs an out. I don't care. I don't think he cares at all about getting noses out of joint. I just think in this case, being the LA Kings, Bernier's old team, that this is the time. No travel involved in between. Not a ton of shots tonight either. Played extremely well. Bernier. You said Bernier as well, didn't you?
I said Bernier as well. Okay. You know what? You go with who you think is going to give you the best chance to win. And I'm only saying that if he's not 100%, James Reimer.
Okay, what's the stat you wanted to share?
I don't have the stat.
You've got,
you know,
it there.
Like,
come on.
I know every team is doing it. I know the Detroit Red Wings are doing it. You know, Mike Babcock, Kenny Holland, you know, they played Jimmy Howard last night. They put Mrazek in tonight. I get that thing. The drift.
What's the one stat you want? Stevie Fellin gave us about just back-to-back games.
Well, they showed it on Hockey Night in Canada, too. They said the same thing.
They're not watching. They're
stats.
Listening now. They're listening to us now. They're not watching Hockey Night in Canada.
Well, what kind of stats do you want to know? You want to know the percentage? Okay, there's been 144 back-to-back games played. You
this
understand
year.
What I mean?
Yes.
You get it?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the record. Heading into tonight's game, teams are 54, 73, and 17 in the second of back-to-back games.
Okay.
434 winning percentage, less than 500.
Okay.
Okay. And I also read the stat, which Hockey Night in Canada did have, that the goalie who played the first game and then again played the next night, I think is only 1.9, and I think the percentage even drops even further. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. You had a better percentage putting the other goaltender in.
Yeah. A better percentage putting the other goaltender in. But we still don't know who are the teams that you're playing against. There's a bunch of factors still in there. Give me your best. Give me your best guy, for goodness sakes.
Well,
that's all I'm saying.
When we come back, how about that? We've got a break coming up. We'll talk more about the game. We'll hear from head coach Randy Carlyle. If you do want to get in and offer your opinion, who starts tomorrow? We're not trying to get a full.
I mean, if it's that close, like seriously, if it's that close between the goaltenders, you know?
Yeah.
then what should it matter? What should it matter then? It really shouldn't matter.
No, but you know,
make an excuse.
If you're, it's like
okay, let's bring up the guy from let's bring up the goaltender from the Marlies, for instance, because your percentages stay the same if you bring that guy in.
It's like,
so you want to increase your percentage.
It's like a baseball manager who looks at percentages of hitting and other things, but also
I'm not going there.
No, but if he just solely managed that way, you don't even need a manager. You also have to go with gut feel and those kind of things and making personnel decisions, who's hot, what's the right thing, and all those other variables. So when we come back, we will open the phone lines when we come back and a few other things, chat about it and hear from head coach Randy Carlisle as well. A 4-1 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Detroit Red Wings tonight at Air Canada Centre. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
Again, and Riley carrying in over the line on a Lone Ranger rush. Took the shot, he scores! Morgan Riley, surrounded by four Red Wings, finds the top corner. It's 3-1.
Morgan Riley's fourth of the season, made it 3-1. An empty net by Nazem Kadri added. It's a 4-1 victory for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Detroit Red Wings. We welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Yeah, Ozzy, you got something?
All I was going to say is that's Morgan Riley's fourth goal, as you just mentioned. Dion Phaneuf has one. Jake Gardner has two. That's 4-3 for Morgan Riley against those two guys who you were would have expected are more offensively Well, where's their offensive upside?
More offensive prowess than Morgan Riley. You're right. Den
supposedly.
Phaneuf had it going last year, certainly. I was even wondering about Morgan Riley because I like that side of him. You know, just taking – Jake takes chances all the time. Morgan seems to take more educated chances. As you mentioned, coming down the wrong side, he surprised Mrazek with that shot.
You know what? Here's what I observe from Dion Phaneuf's game. There are aspects, and certainly in the last, say, 3 weeks per se, you know, for Dion's Phaneuf's game. I mean, him and Cody Franson as a pair now have developed and have become the shutdown pair. And I think you would agree that they do a pretty good job. And Dion Phaneuf, I think, has played more consistent defensively. There are times, again, we saw it tonight where, you know, how in the world is he losing that race to the outside? We saw that a couple of times, right? Which is a little bit sometimes eye-opening. And you think back to when he first broke into the National Hockey League, the big shot, the 20 goals, and almost as though he's become more of a defensive guy because he's almost, in some respects, lost his offensive upside. Certainly the decision when to shoot the puck or when not to shoot the puck the other night on the 5-on-3 was evident. He doesn't have confidence now with the big bomb, remember? He just could not get it through, like Brian McCabe, for instance. Now he rarely shoots the puck, or when he does, it's oftentimes not the right time. Like, so here's a guy that logs a lot of minutes, plays on your number one power play, has only got one goal.
Well, that two-man advantage last game against Detroit really showed it, that they won the faceoff, went back to Phaneuf. He chose not to shoot when he had the shot. They dilly-dallied for a while, and then when he got it, he shot when he probably shouldn't have, and it was like 35 seconds into that two-man advantage and changed the momentum, their lack of execution.
I just think his focus and his mindset is a little bit different now, is that take care of business and, you know, your own end as best you can.
Mm-hmm.
Make smart plays with the puck, which oftentimes Dion is not guilty of turning it over or making, you know, dumb plays. He does move the puck well, and yet I think he's more concerned about now what he does without the puck than what he's actually trying to do with the puck, certainly in the offensive zone. Looking for Phil, passing it over to Franson when he's on the power play and not shooting it at times when he can be shooting it.
Want to hear from a couple of more of the Maple Leafs at the podium. Did want to bring up to you, though, Ozzy, because we taking a look at the postgame stats, wondered when the last time was the Toronto Maple Leafs had played a home-and-home on a Saturday and Sunday. And trying to remember, top of my head, I could not remember. So the last time, and you were on the team then, the Toronto Maple Leafs was back in 1992. October 17th, 18th, and they had back-to-back home games on a Saturday, Sunday. The Leafs defeated Chicago 4-3 on the Saturday before losing 5-1 to the Minnesota North Stars on the Sunday. That would be right in the height of the Blue Jays going on to win their first World Series October
17th. We lost 5-1 to the Minnesota.
Yeah, the Minnesota North Stars. Yeah.
Who's in net?
For the Minnesota North Stars or the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I don't care about the Minnesota North Stars goaltending.
Well, it would be Felix Pott then, probably.
Yeah.
It would
Then we went back with the number two guy and lost 5-1.
And who was that? Damian Rhodes?
I'm just saying.
Anyway, that was, of course, the start of that great run, which actually didn't start that great. Around Christmas, the team was still one win under 500, then took off and had the great run in the spring of 1993. But that would be right around when the Jays are winning playoff and World Series games as well. So it goes back to October 1992.
Wow.
How about that?
A long time. So the last time the Leafs obviously played on a Sunday night. I remember last year they had a couple
of Sunday night games.
But they were on the road on the Saturday a number of times.
That's right. Even had a rare Saturday off. So there you go. Back to back. So we're talking, you're welcome, 22 years ago that it happened. Well, after the game, they usually make a tandem available. And we're chatting about Morgan Rielly, and we're also talking about Richard Ponick, two of the stars of tonight's game. So try to figure out the voices. Here they are at the podium, both scoring goals in the 4-1 win, Richard Ponick and Morgan Rielly.
So I was happy and tried to do something and kind of lost the puck, but it went in, so I'm happy.
What did you expect, less the breakaway or the fight?
Pardon?
What did you expect, less the breakaway or the fight?
Less?
Yeah.
Maybe both.
Yeah. Done that though,
junior. Fight? Yeah, this was my first fight in NHL.
How do you think you did?
I don't know. It was the end of the game, you know, so I feel pretty good about now, but I was just pissed, you know, and just let it go, you know.
Morgan, I saw your reaction when you watched the fight. I guess I don't know if you're watching up there, but you seem almost amazed. Were you surprised that he had it in?
No, not really. He's obviously a pretty strong guy. When he's in the dressing room, clothes on, you can kind of tell he's kind of ripped. But and by clothes, I mean shirt, not everything. But no, you know, he's obviously very strong. He's a tough guy, and you know, he played well tonight, and he was worked up, and you know, I thought he did very well for himself.
Talk about your team's effort in this entire series against Detroit, last game?
I think when we were on the road there, as a team, I don't think we were that happy with how we played. But obviously, when you get 2 points, you know, you're very happy with that. But I think, you know, playing tonight, we knew that we had to clean it up a little bit and just play stronger. And I thought, as a team, we were able to do that. I thought we played a great game and, you know, a good two-way game. And that's a pretty good team that we beat. So I think we're very happy with it.
Where do you see the most improvement, Morgan, from game to game?
Neutral zone. I think that when you played on the road against them, they were coming with a lot of speed. And, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to work on that in practice and in meetings and stuff. And I thought that, you know, that went well. And, you know, we just played to the game plan, and I thought it was good.
Richard, that's career high 6 goals for you now. And is it just about the opportunity of getting a chance here that maybe you didn't get given all the good players in Tampa?
Well, you know, like, I'm just trying my best, you know, like, every shift. It doesn't matter if I play 5 minutes. I'm just focusing on next shift. And now it's going in the net. So I'm really happy and glad about it. And hopefully it will just keep going this way.
Well, sometimes the voices are hard to tell apart, but a little distinctive, as you may clear the Slovakian accent of Richard Ponick. Morgan Rielly as well. So Ponick's trying to say on that goal that
he lost the puck.
He
didn't lose the puck.
Well, why would he say that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he wanted to have a little fun.
Okay. Well, he talked about the fight. He's actually a guy that's enjoyed having fun. His celebration, the other goal, the fact he was asleep at the switch when Randy Carlyle sent him out. He went out late and then scored the game last week.
6 goals for a fourth line player. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the transition that the Maple Leafs have made and all the talk in the offseason about, we got to start playing 4 lines, right? So the concerted effort that the Maple Leafs have made with the acquisitions of the various players along the way, Ponick being one of them, picked up off of waivers. And again, I brought it up to you before, the Fraser McLarens, the Colt Norris were, you know, as far as goals or the ability to play, skate, do lots of different things. It's just very interesting to to be able to have that kind of depth now. And these guys scoring key goals at varying degrees of a hockey game with, you know, seven or eight minutes of work.
You're talking about a fourth line player scoring at a 20 goal pace.
Yeah.
Richard Ponick is scoring at a 20 goal pace. If you have six goals, you're a little bit under the one third mark of the season. So that puts it in perspective about that type of addition. Jonathan Bernier, again, a star tonight, not overworked like the other games. The Leafs did outshoot the Detroit Red Wings 41-28. He did have to come up with some big saves early in that first period when shots were equal 12-12. Let's hear from Jonathan Bernier after tonight's 4-1 win.
The division games are so important. Detroit won the first two in the series. You won the last three in the series. What does that say about your team?
I thought tonight was one of our best game of the year. We compete hard. We are tough to play against, and they're not an easy team to play. We knew they played last night, and we just wanted to keep that pace high and give it to them a little bit.
You made that ridiculous save in the first when they got a little puck move and got you guys hemmed. Does a save like that kind of set the tone for you a little bit, maybe?
You know what? I had to make that save because I messed up. You know, I tried to cover it. The guy got a stick on it, and I was kind of caught off position. I just tried to make myself big, and it worked out. But, you know, obviously you want, every time you make a save like that, you want to get the momentum on our side, and it seemed that it worked tonight.
I think it's five out of your last seven starts. You've seen under 30 shots. It's starting to look like Los Angeles a little bit. Are you seeing a little more structure back there?
No, I thought tonight we played a great game. Our F3 was good. We're always on top of them in the neutral zone, and I think that was our problem a little bit. Last game that we played them over there, they got a few breakaways, but tonight we made the adjustment and we executed well.
How bad are you going to be positioning Randy to play tomorrow?
It's up to him. Rimes deserved to be in. He played a great game last game, and it's whatever his gut's feeling tells him, I guess.
You feel good.
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan Bernier.
Do you like that little ha-ha,
ha-ha? A little bit. Everyone's in a good mood. Everyone's saying the right things, responding the right way. And Jonathan Bernier, no exception to that. Here's Mike Babcock's quote after tonight's game. He said, it's a good quote. I thought this game kind of looked like the game in our building. They were way better than us, way quicker and executed. We were getting caught and didn't execute. You actually haven't said, do you not think it's better me reading it or Jim Babcock saying it himself? What do you think, Matt? Okay, well, let's hear. Okay, let's hear. Let's hear Mike Babcock talking like Mike Babcock.
Any concerns about the offense? One goal tonight.
I didn't think we played good enough. I think we've been pretty good offensively the last little bit here without scoring the last couple of games. I think that comes if you play good tonight, though we didn't play good enough to create offense. I mean, the first period we had some chances rolling around. Bernie is decent saves. I thought he made a real good save with the game at 2-1 on Pavel, walked in home free. I think it was 2-1, might have been 3-1 at that point, but we weren't hard enough on the goal. We didn't spend any time in their zone.
Bad game that happens in the 82 games.
Well, I think part of it, but I also think, this is our third game in four nights, just like the energy level they had in our building. We looked way quicker and better than them, and the Reimers stole the game, but those things are going to happen. You got to play the games, and if we execute better and don't turn over the puck, your energy level, you're not wearing yourself out in your own zone. But when you do that like we did, and you give them credit, they were skating, so and that leads to you turning the pucks over and you spend too much time in your own zone. Well, I didn't think, if you go through the whole group, I thought Helm probably was our best player, provided the most energy, but we didn't have enough guys. So, I thought Datsyuk's line early was pretty good, but other than that, we didn't have enough guys that you'd say, geez, they were good.
There he is. Would you rather hear from Mike Babcock himself or?
Rather than you reading
quoting
the quotes?
Absolutely. Mike Babcock. There he is. Mike Babcock himself.
Firsthand. And you know what? What was unusual is to watch his reaction to his team. They iced the puck a number of times in the first 5 minutes of the hockey game.
First 1 minute.
Yeah. You know what? And you could tell that they were just simply off. And, no excuses. They didn't execute well. This was their third game in four nights. Leafs Wednesday. Last night at home against Florida. Tonight, again, against the Maple Leafs. No excuses, but Bernier made the saves when he had to in that first period. And you know what? That goal that JVR scored a minute after Granwall made it 1-0. Again, those goals are big to come back against a team that comes into your building and knows how to manage the puck well. They tied it immediately. Had the game gone on with the Red Wings in a one-goal lead, had they won or been winning after the first period, I think it would have been different, certainly moving forward.
Yeah, Red Wings had the 1-0 lead, the 15-27 mark. And as you say, 1 minute later, 16-27, James Van Riemsdyk tied it up. And really, the Leafs never looked back after that. That's when they took control of the game that the Red Wings had control up to that point.
Well, they did, Gordon. Yet, as you know, that even though the Ponic goal with 2 minutes and 10 seconds left gave the Leafs a 2-1 lead, their perfect 12-0-0 when leading after two periods of play. But you know as well as I know, going into the third period, a one-goal lead, anything can certainly happen. Momentum changes very quickly. But the Morgan Rielly goal, a minute and 42 into the period, was basically that's it. The Red Wings were done. One and done after that, right?
Well, one and done. Let's take a look at the out-of-town scoreboard, what's gone on today around the National Hockey League. Let's start with final games. There are a couple this afternoon. Ottawa defeats the Boston Bruins 3-2 in a shootout. So Dave Cameron's first win as the head coach. Zibanejad with his eighth and Legwon with the sixth for the Senators. Craig Cunningham with his first, a shorthanded goal for the Bruins, and Louis Erickson his fifth. Again, a 3-2 shootout victory, Ottawa over Boston.
Craig Cunningham, who's he?
I don't know. Shorthanded goal.
Wow. We'll have to look him up.
We'll check him out.
I'll get back to you. In Philadelphia, the Flyers are on a bit of a roll. That last game on the road trip in Los Angeles, they win. And they win big tonight, 5-1 against the Carolina Hurricane. The lone scorer for the Hurricanes was Eric Staal, his seventh in the second period on the power play. But in the first period, Sean Couturier for the Flyers, his seventh. Wayne Simmonds, his 13th of the season for the Flyers. And then it was all Flyers after the Staal goal. Jakub Voracek, his 11th of the season. Scott Lofton gets his first, and Michael Raffel, his eighth of the season. Steve Mason gets the win, 5-1 Philadelphia over Carolina.
Take a look at other finals that went on again tonight. We had Dale Tallon on earlier, the general manager of the Florida Panthers. It was great of him joining us on Hockey Nation. He was pretty, it was all business anyway. They had won last night over Detroit. They get to overtime against the Buffalo Sabres. It's the Buffalo Sabres that get the 4-3 overtime victory over Florida. Buffalo goals. Cody Hodson is second. He was a healthy scratch the other night. Marcus Foligno was fourth. Brian Gionta is fourth. And in overtime, it's Nikita Zadorov, his first at the 29-second mark for Buffalo. Scoring for Florida, Sean Bergenheim is fifth. Jimmy Hayes is seventh. Jussi Jokinen, his third.
The Islanders hosted the Chicago Blackhawks. And by the way, the Blackhawks were the hottest team in could very well still be the hottest team in the National Hockey League, 9-1 in their last 10 hockey games. But the Islanders defeat the Blackhawks 3-2 for Chicago. Daniel Carcillo is fourth of the season. Patrick Kane on a beautiful backhand top shelf on Yaroslav Halak, his 14th of the season. But for the Islanders, Cal Clutterbuck on a most rare giveaway by Duncan Keith, trying to go D-to-D down low, and Clutterbuck intercepts and scores his fourth. Opozo in the third period tied it, his seventh of the season, 10-10 of the third period on the power play. And then about 51 seconds later, Lubomir Vyshnovsky with a second. That eventually was the game winner for the Islanders. They break a three-game losing streak in which they've given up quite a few goals, and a big win against the Blackhawks at home. For the Islanders to maintain pace with the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're still only a few points behind the Penguins in the Metropolitan Division.
Well, absolutely. On all that, Craig Cunningham, by the way, played two games last year for the Bruins. This is his fifth game this year. He's a left winger, first ever NHL goal, and was in Providence a couple of years, a fourth-round pick from the Vancouver Giants. So they continue to develop those players out. We were talking about him getting a goal earlier. Meanwhile, Nicholas Backstrom, no stranger to scoring, gets a hat trick tonight as the Washington Capitals defeat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Backstrom now has 9 goals. Eric Fair got the fourth. Matthew Carl his third, and Tyler Johnson his ninth in a 4-2 losing cause. 4-2 the Capitals over the Lightning.
The Pittsburgh Penguins went into Columbus without a Sidney Crosby in the lineup, and you saw a picture of him. You mentioned the swollen glands.
That's correct. They're not calling it the mumps. I'm calling it the mumps.
Okay. You're calling it
the mumps. I'm diagnosing it from afar.
Nonetheless, in the shootout, the Blue Jackets win 4-3, scoring for Pittsburgh. Blake Como, his 10th of the season. Chris Letang, his 6th of the season and 7th for the Pittsburgh Penguins. For Columbus, Nick Foligno with his 14th. Boone Jenner, his 6th. Jack Johnson gets his 2nd of the season. And then it was Ryan Johansson in the shootout, which eventually became the winning goal for Columbus, 4-3 winners over Pittsburgh.
Anaheim, probably the as hot a team as there is in the National Hockey League in a lot of ways. They defeat the Winnipeg Jets 4-1. The Jets had a 1-0 lead, but four unanswered goals by the Ducks. Jakob Silverberg, his 4th. Ryan Getzlaf, his 10th. Nate Thompson, his 3rd, shorthanded. And then the third period, another shorthanded Greg goal. Andrew Cogliano, his 4th. How do you think he's liking the trade from Edmonton? Anyway, Cogliano was 4th. It's a 4-1 win for Anaheim over Winnipeg.
Well, I think he's been there about 4 years now. I think he does like it.
I know. I was humoring you in the audience, Ozzie. I assumed he did.
Minnesota Wild visit Arizona in a shootout. They get the win 4-3 for Arizona. Ekman Larson with his 6th. Antoine Vermette has his 8th of the season. Lauri Korpikoski, his 3rd for the Wild. Nino Niederreiter. 13 goals for Niederreiter. Jason Zucker has 11. You hear that, Gord?
Jason Zucker has 11. Wow.
He has 11 goals. And Zach Parise in the third period tied it for Minnesota. His 11th of the season
Keeping pace with Zucker.
Keeping a pace with Zucker. And in the shootout, Mikko Koivu gets the game winner. The Wild win 4-3 in Arizona.
See what they did there? They put down the shootout goal scores, but they put their goal number. It doesn't really matter. Like Parise is 12th.
No, it's silly. Yeah, it doesn't make no sense.
I know. Whoever's there in Arizona, come on, wake up. Okay, Dallas, 4-3 winners. Much-needed victory for the Dallas Stars over the New Jersey Devils. You got a bet with a friend.
I do.
Who says the Devils are going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's for lunch, and I think I'm going to collect that lunch.
You might as well do it next week.
Yeah.
You might as well pay up now. Tyler Seguin, how about that, his 23rd. Jason Spezza, his 6th. Trevor Daley, his 6th. Sean Horkoff, the game winner, with his 4th for New Jersey. John Merrill, his 2nd. Eric Gelinas, his 4th. Scotty Gomez, his 1st.
Okay, games under progress. Am I allowed to refresh my button here just to get up-to-the-date scoring?
Yeah, of course. We want to be up to the moment. That's what this show's all about.
In Colorado, 11 minutes to go in the second period. The Blues hold on to a 2-1 lead over the Avalanche. Eric Johnson for Colorado on the power play opened the scoring, his 5th of the season. And about a minute and 20 seconds later, Kevin Shattenkirk for St. Louis scores his 4th. And then David Backes has his 8th in the second period, 2-1 halfway through the game.
Talking about teams, you know, you want to bounce back when you're a bit of skid. The Calgary Flames are one of those teams. They've lost 4 in a row. The Vancouver Canucks were here last Saturday, and it's been going swimmingly for them till they came east and met Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa. So want to get back on track and find their winning ways at home. That's not the case so far in the second period. They're losing to the New York Rangers by a score of 4-0. Ryan McDonagh is 1st. JT Miller is 3rd. Matt Zuccarello was 5th. Mark Stahl his 1st right now for the Rangers, leading the Vancouver 4-0 in the second.
Yeah, you know, it's always tough when you get that first game after a road trip. You go back home and 6:46 into the game only was 3-0 already for the Rangers. And as you mentioned, 4-0 so far halfway through that game. And the only other game at the end of one period of play in San Jose, the Sharks are leading Nashville 1-0. Thomas Hertl has his 7th of the season.
And that's the out-of-town scores. There are 13 games in all going on around the National Hockey League, and we always try to cover them all for you on Saturdays. We're going to come back and talk more about what's going on tonight, a 4-1 win for the Leafs over Detroit Red Wings. But a few more Leaf players, just a couple more to hear from. And Nazem Kadri was one of those we chatted with Chris Johnson about. He's, of course... Mark Osborne tries to dilute it a little bit, his contributions of late, but he had the most ice time of all Leaf forwards tonight, 19 minutes, 26 seconds, had a goal, was a plus one. Here's Nazem Kadri after tonight's 4-1 win.
For sure. I mean, that was definitely a lot better than what we played in Detroit, but you know, at the end of the day, good teams just, no matter what, when they're not even playing their best, they find ways to win. And that's what we did in Detroit, and Well, thankfully, it was a lot better effort through 60 minutes tonight.
A win's a win, but is there more satisfaction when you win a game like that than, say, the last time when you kind of control the play more?
Of course there is. I mean, that's the team we're chasing. That's a great team, too. I mean, you got to give them all the credit in the world. They're well coached and seem to bring it every single night. So, you know, for them, it was their end of a of a back-to-back, and those can be tough, especially coming on the road. But felt like we got off to a good start and just built from there.
You were talking about playing a full 60 yesterday when you were talking about tonight's game. Jonathan was talking about this might have been the best game of the season he has played. Is this something that you almost can hang your hat on?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just from, you know, puck drop to the last buzzer, I think we played pretty solid throughout. And even when, you know, when we didn't have the puck, you know, in the D zone, we kept them to the outside and limited their chances. Bernie obviously made some big saves for us, but power play came through again, so... Just all the components are going right now, and that's really what we need to be a successful team.
So how do you deal with the quick turnaround when tomorrow's early start?
Yeah, I mean, we've played plenty of these back-to-back games. Obviously, the 5 o'clock start's a little different, but I just go home, try to get some rest, get some sleep, and I don't think we have any meetings or anything in the morning, so just try and get as much rest as possible and be ready for a good Kings team tomorrow.
There he is, Nazem Kadri, after tonight's 4-1 win.
It's an adjustment to play a 5 o'clock game after a back-to-back. I got to say, I hated playing afternoon games, especially in the Boston Garden that we often would play there on a Saturday afternoon.
Like at 1 o'clock though.
Yeah, 1 o'clock. Be asleep. I mean, you'd have to get up for your pregame meal of pancakes and eggs or whatever at, you know, 9 o'clock and then go back to your room and lay down for a little bit. It just felt awful at 1 o'clock. Now 5 o'clock is obviously a little bit different and it will be an adjustment. You get to the rink about, you know, 2:30 or so, like forget about your afternoon nap. So it's tough to get to sleep after a game tonight. For these players, have something to eat, cool down, wind down, get up at a decent time, try to do your routine as best you can. And yet it's going to be different because I don't expect them to have afternoon naps. So it's going to be an adjustment, but the LA Kings are doing the same thing. And yet, you know, I think they've adjusted their time zone change, right? Because they've been here for quite some time now.
Do they all still have afternoon naps still?
Majority of the players. I remember that there was only one guy that I played with that did not have an afternoon nap. Maybe there was two guys, but one guy was Kelly Miller. Do you remember him?
Yeah,
the Rangers and the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
I tried that once to not have an afternoon nap, and I always napped after that. It was the worst game I ever played. Seriously.
You
know, the routine is really important. It just takes a little bit of the edge off, you know, when you just lay down, even if you have a power nap for, you know, half an hour or whatever. So
I just had one during your answer. I feel refreshed and vigorous. No, it's interesting and ready. I just wonder now because they go so early to the game now. Mm-hmm. Like it used to be the bus left 2 hours before the game, the bus left. Now guys are at the rink 2.5 hours before the game. So they're really, you know, then you've got the skates go longer and all the other things.
I know, but you know what at home, you've got your pregame are all done. These guys come out of the rink. They just go over to the Platinum Club there, beautiful spread, and you just walk across to your apartment. These guys live right downtown here, right? How tough is it?
They all live downtown?
Just about.
Yeah, I don't think
anyway.
Guys,
Clarkie lives in Etobicoke.
Well, he's a Toronto guy, but it used to be guys lived in Mississauga, then guys lived North End. But, yeah, basically, why wouldn't you? Smart place to live downtown for the Maple Leafs. Well, Corbinian Holzer is hoping he faces that dilemma.
Well, but he still lives here.
Not much of a dilemma. He lives in Toronto anyway as a Marley or as a Leaf. But, well, if he keeps collecting the NHL money, he can just keep moving on up. Anyway, here he is, Corbinian Holzer. Solid, solid addition for the Toronto Maple Leafs is play. Tonight, 17 minutes, 53 seconds, got an assist and was a plus one. Also, 5 hits. Here he is after the 4-1 win.
Yeah, there was a little bobbled puck in the neutral zone, and they picked it off. And as I saw the guy coming off the bench, and I think Tatar got to the middle and kind of lifted his stick and was anticipating for the drop pass for the guy coming back. And I was a little lucky that I picked it off, and then I saw that we were changing and we were changing. I just... threw it up there, and thank God I hit a guy who has a lot of skills, and he showed it off there, and I made a great goal there.
What's he brought to your team, Ponick?
I think he's huge. He's in the minutes he plays, he's always been unbelievable. You should watch him in practice. He has got some really, really high skill, and he's got some nice moves, and like I said, he showed on the goal, and he's a very good addition, and he can even throw it, so it's good to see, and I think, like I said, he's a very skilled player, and I think he's been a great addition.
Who's the three stars tonight, Corbinian? Where is your game right now?
I'm just trying to be consistent. That's all I worry about right now. And you know, when I came in the league 2 years ago, I think I had a decent start and kind of fell off then. So all I worry about now is trying to be consistent and help the team win and just being physical. And so far, it's been still a good start, just 8 games. So it's not much of an NHL career yet. So I'm not satisfied with that, and I'm just trying to keep going. And like I said, it's an improvement every day. I try to improve every day and just learn and soak up as much as I can. And with 26, almost 27 years old, it's about time that I step in the league and show I can play.
Well, Cabernier Holzer looks like, and he's hoping this is the time he does step in the league. Huh, Ozzy?
Well, at 26 or 27, yes, the time is now. How many 29, 30-year-olds that have been around the block a couple of times can actually find a living at the National Hockey League level on a regular basis? This is make it or break it for Holzer, and I give him credit. He's played with some jam in his game, which I was hoping that he would have done so the first time he came up, because that's your role, stay-at-home defenseman. I mean, are you going to play nice? Seriously.
Oh, I know.
You know, when you've got that size, this is the element that this team needs on your back end. You saw the way Franson threw down Pavel Datsyuk, the one exchange in the third period, right? When Dion plays with a little muster, same thing with Polak, Stefan Robida, although he's a little bit undersized. I mean, that's what you have to do in your own end of the ice. Lead by example as a defensive group to put some edge in your game. That's a positive element.
Well, it looks like he has established that he will be back here for the rest of the season. That's not our decision to make, but it does seem like everybody feels he would get claimed on waivers if that were going to be the case. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up. We'll go over the game and hear from Randy Carlisle and much, much more. It's a 4-1 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Detroit Red Wings. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand, absolutely free.
Center to salute a team that has now gone 8-1-1 and closed substantial ground on the Detroit Red Wings and the Montreal Canadiens.
Joe Bowen, the final call tonight, a 4-1 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Detroit Red Wings. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne welcoming you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. After Tuesday's game against Anaheim, of course, tomorrow they play Los Angeles. Tuesday they play Anaheim. They will have, 8 out of 9 and then 9 out of 12 games on the road. So great to be making hay at home. But we also learned last year, as much hay as you make, you've got to still be baling it the final third or quarter of the season.
Think about it this way, Gord. 19th game, home game tonight, 20 tomorrow, 21 against Anaheim on Tuesday, 21-10. That's 31 home games. Then after that, you have 51 left, of which 31 will be on the road. That's a lot of road games.
A lot of road games. They've played well on the road, uh-huh, which is the one, yep, upside, but they will be away a ton because of the World Juniors. And speaking of long destinations and that, they'll be going on some long trips. We chatted earlier with Eddie Olchuk about, and you brought up the question, Eddie, about Las Vegas. And it seems like, as far as American expansion or relocation locations for an NHL team, that seems to be project number one now, and certainly the one that's getting a fair bit of notoriety.
Yeah, you know what? And I wish I would have been able to watch a little bit more of Elliot Friedman, who interviewed the potential new owner on Hockey Night in Canada this evening. But I couldn't watch it all because I had to spend more time listening to you.
That's a priority. Okay.
I PVR'd it. So I'm going to go back home, but I was kind of the parts that I did watch, I was a little bit intrigued and impressed about this gentleman who, you know, went to the Naval Academy, I believe at West Point, mm-hmm, or that's the military academy, not the Naval Academy. But you know what I mean, a branch of the military in the United States. But there's something to be said about that was compelling to hear why he wanted to bring the team to Las Vegas. And when we talked to Eddie Olchuk, same thing. Mm-hmm. There is this part of the first ever major league sport to have a team in Las Vegas and the growth that's occurred there in the last many, many years.
Well, you know, the good news for you, Ozzy, is because I know you struggle to set your VCR and about two-thirds of the time it doesn't, you know, doesn't take to whatever you're trying to record. The gentleman's name is Bill Foley, and this is certainly a far different venture than when it was the Las Vegas Posse of the CFL when they tried to locate one of the expansion CFL teams in the United States. And Elliot Freeman did interview him, and we've got that interview, so we don't have the audio. If you want me to maybe Google a picture of Elliot there, and you can look at it while you listen to the video. But here it was on Hockey Night in Canada earlier. I mean, this is the guy fronting a very serious NHL bid, or serious bid to locate an NHL team in Las Vegas, Bill Foley.
When the idea of the NHL in Vegas comes up, I think everybody wants it because everybody wants that road trip. But I also think everybody is skeptical. Can this really work? Why do you believe it can?
I mean, there are a lot of reasons. First, Las Vegas is a big town now, 2.3 million people. And it's not just a tourist town, a casino town. It's a town that has lots of other businesses there. It's a real community. Schools, churches, sports. It's an avid sports town. The Wranglers have done well in Las Vegas without really having a decent venue. We are very confident that Las Vegas is ready for hockey.
Ticket packages. The last team to move was Winnipeg, or enter the league was Winnipeg. They charged for regular seats between $39 and $129, and you had to commit for 3 to 5 years. How will that compare to what you guys do?
Right on the money. It's precisely the same. We want to have our tickets priced so we're at the league average, and that's one of the commitments we've made to the league, that we're going to sell tickets for that average of $62 to $65 a seat. But we need to have the $39 seats, and we need to have the $120 seats to average everything out. And we do want to have these 3 to 5 year packages, but we're going to probably be a little more open about having one and 2 year packages to start with.
So this is the secret stairwell to the wine cellar?
This is the secret stairwell to the wine cellar. There we go.
Now, I understand that there's something on the stairwell here that's going to appeal to Canadian hockey fans.
I think the your Canadian viewers are going to like this.
So this is an autographed Gretzky jersey, and you also have an autographed photo from the last game he played in the NHL. What's your tie-in with him?
You know, Wayne's just a friend. We met him. We met through another mutual friend. We're actually making wine in the United States for Wayne, and we're selling the wine throughout the United States. We don't sell it in Canada, mm-hmm. But a Chardonnay and a Sauv Blanc. And I'm proud to say Wayne's a friend. He's a great guy.
I think the question that people are going to have is, he wants to get back in the NHL. He should be back in the NHL. If you get a team, will he be involved?
You know, I've always felt that it's bad luck to start planning too far in advance. But Wayne is an advisor, and he's an advisor today, and I'm sure he'll be very helpful to us as we go forward.
I'm assuming at the end of this, if Las Vegas gets a team, there'll be a name the team contest, but you have a preference, something that you would like to see. What is it?
Well, I love the name Black Knights because I was a West Point guy. I went to Army. It's close to my heart, and the Black Knight, many people don't know this, is actually the good knight. And I think Black Knights would be a great name.
And when was the first time you really believed that this was possible?
I would say that it was an idea a year ago. It was evolving 6 months ago. I met with the executive committee about 6 months ago. They were receptive. They loved the arena. We made our presentation and we left. There was no commitment. There's never been a commitment. And then as we moved through the summer and into the fall, more and more discussions with the commissioner about what it would take and how we should do it and if we were going to be successful, what he needed from us. And so I would say over the last 60 days, 90 days, my confidence level has increased pretty dramatically.
So Chalk Hill is one of Mr. Foley's wineries. There was a party here for him on Thursday night. His 70th birthday is upcoming.
And on this gift bottle, it goes through a number of his accomplishments in life, his birth, his graduation from West Point, his marriage in 1969, and there is room for something right down here.
Just enough room for the logo of the Las Vegas NHL franchise right there.
Elliot Friedman, Bill Foley, a very interesting man, to say the least. Also interesting, Ozzy, he brings up Wayne Gretzky. Mm-hmm. He seems to make it clear that that's his preference and expectation, that if they do get an NHL franchise there, that Gretzky would be involved.
As an advisor, he's already probably
advisor for now,
given him some advice. But let me ask you this. After listening to just a brief part of that interview, are you impressed? Are you a little bit more optimistic in that regard, or you're going to hold off any real comment or opinion on the whole thing?
Well, hey, Richard Spanos was a guy that apparently impressed the NHL, and he was a con man.
Oh, no.
When he almost bought the New York Islanders. This guy sounds like a very, and I know the background of him, impressive life story. You mentioned that as well. He is the seems to be the real deal as far as the kind of owner, kind of partner you'd want in the National Hockey League. But the other part is the NHL, there's no question. They seem to want to get the toehold. They want to be first in Las Vegas. They moved the NHL awards to Las Vegas, a very non-hockey city, rather than doing it in Toronto. So I just get the feeling, yeah. And Eddie O said it. Eddie O just said, where is the best new market in the United States? He felt it was Las Vegas.
Well, look at the number of people that are there now. And Eddie did bring up the other aspect of it is if you decide to take a team of your executives or your corporate partners on a trip or a weekend to go see that particular team play. I mean, there's a lot of options, you know, right there. And with the other businesses, and there's a lot of money there. I mean, it remains to be seen, but it's becoming further and further an intriguing thing and a very interesting thing to see happen.
See, I don't agree with people that seem to think, oh, this will be, like, if I go to Las Vegas, I don't want to go to an NHL game. Okay, I don't go very, I haven't been for a number of years, but I would do the four-day trips. I wouldn't want to go to an NHL game. I'd go somewhere else. I mean, I obviously Toronto,
yeah, there's,
but I'd rather go Montreal,
all sorts
Chicago.
There's other reasons why you go to Vegas. You don't go to watch a hockey game.
So it would have to be the core, much like happened in Denver, much like whether it arguably hasn't happened or will happen in Phoenix, that type of thing. They just seem to feel that's the one untapped major market, doesn't have a professional team, and that appears where they want to go.
Okay.
And when we talked to Dale Tallon, he made it clear that the Florida Panthers
are staying in
Are staying. He got a little bit annoyed about that talk coming up. But, hey, their owner is using it as leverage because whether in a perfect world, Gary Bettman would prefer to expansion teams, then you divvy up the expansion fee pie rather than just relocating. But it could be a mix of both. But there's no doubt there's going to be 32 teams. No question about it.
Yep.
Quick note, tomorrow, we got 1 minute left. Tomorrow, Toronto Maple Leafs take on the Los Angeles Kings. What's going to be key for the team to continue this momentum?
Well, you know what? I'm not going to give any keys.
Because you're going to save them for tomorrow.
I'm waiting for their norm. And by the way, I'm a little bit disappointed. Once again, Gord, we're off the air in about 40 seconds. We didn't even go over my keys
tonight's
victory.
I know.
Sense of urgency without the puck, A+.
Okay.
Forced Detroit to defend down low. Did they do so? Yes, absolutely. They played, they outshot the Red Wings and then the power play. You got to score on your power play. They did. 3 for 3, Oz. Thank you.
I see. I knew it was going to be quick. It was like a perfect. Your teacher's pet. Teacher's pet. Gold star for Mark Osborne. There he goes. Finally, he's going to announce. He's going to advance to the next grade. We're going to advance to the next game. That's tomorrow. Tonight, a 4-1 win for the Maple Leafs over the Detroit Red Wings. You've been listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelnick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590. Fans.